Despite the popularity of lottery, the revenues generated are not a significant contributor to state budgets.
This is Family Policy Matters with NC Family President John Rustin.
Thank you for joining us for Family Policy Matters. Our guest today is Lucy Dudayan, Senior Policy Analyst at the Rockefeller Institute for Government in New York State. Lucy is the principal author of a new report from the Rockefeller Institute entitled State Revenues from Gambling, Short-Term Relief, Long-Term Disappointment. She's with us today to talk about the findings from that report and why gambling is not a reliable and sustainable source of revenue for states. Lucy, welcome to Family Policy Matters. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on. Now, Lucy, tell us briefly about this report by the Rockefeller Institute and its purpose. What aspects of state gambling did you examine, and what states did you study in the report?
Sure. Actually, the report that we released last month is the fourth report examining the trends in gambling revenue. The first report that we conducted was around mid-2008, during the Great Recession, when a number of states were looking at expansion of various gambling activities. So we did the first report where we examined the trends in gambling revenues and the impact of the recession on the gambling revenues. The subsequent studies clearly showed that gambling revenues were not recession-proof. For the study that we released last month, we mostly examined gambling revenues from major types of gambling activities such as lotteries, commercial casinos, racinos, and pari-mutuel wagering. And we did so for all states that have that have gambling activities. The only two states that do not have gambling are Hawaii and Utah, and in Alaska, gambling is permitted at Indian casinos only. So it's the only study that I am aware of that presents longitudinal data for nearly all types of gambling activities across all states.
Oh, very interesting. Now, I know one question that you examined in the report is why states engage in gambling. Talk about the lottery in particular for a few minutes, and I know that North Carolina was one of the most recent states to enact a lottery in the mid-2000s. Why do so many states often turn to the lottery in the hopes of generating revenue?
Well, in fact, lottery is one of the more traditional types of gambling. Lottery expansions were particularly popular in the 70s and 80s. And currently, lottery operations are legal in 44 states. New Hampshire was the first state to legalize lottery in 1964. North Carolina is indeed one of the latest adopter states, and states had adopted lotteries in the hopes of raising more revenues for the so-called good causes. Proceeds are often earmarked by law. States normally put the revenues generated from the lottery in the general fund or in a dedicated fund targeted toward particular program areas. Usually that's education, veterans programs, environmental protection, and natural resources. And despite the popularity of lottery, the revenues generated are not a significant contributor to state budgets. More so, if we look at the inflation-adjusted figures, for the nation as a whole, we haven't seen much growth in revenues from lottery in the recent years.
Well, I know that your report looks at the percentage of overall revenues generated by the states and the percentage that comes from gambling activities. And on average, if I understand correctly, typically states that have gambling activities, lotteries, et cetera, may generate about 2% to 2.5% of their overall revenues from those gambling operations. So it does make up a relatively very small percentage of their overall budgets.
That is correct.
During the so-called Great Recession in the late 2000s, many states chose not to raise taxes, but instead expand various forms of state-sponsored gambling. Whether they had those forms of gambling already and sought to just increase the existence of them or to institute additional forms of gambling in an attempt to generate more revenue for the state. Is this something that worked according to your research, or are those states experiencing different types of results as a response to that?
Raising taxes from gambling are politically more feasible, and tax revenues from gambling have been very, very popular during the Great Recession. The overall trends indicate that despite the fact that many states have turned to gambling over the past over the past 8 years, we see that the growth in tax and fee revenues from major types of gambling have not kept the pace with the growth in state and local government tax collections or overall economy. So to answer your question, no, it did not work. As a whole, average annual growth rate was about 0.3% between 2008 and 2015.
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a resource from NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
Now, you show in the report that gambling revenue, including lottery revenue, also did not do well in 2015, especially compared to 2014. How many states saw declines in gambling revenues last year? And what about North Carolina? How did the lottery perform in North Carolina during the last year?
Inflation-adjusted lottery revenue collections declined by $31 million or 0.7% from fiscal year 2014 to 2015. Looking at all states, about 27 states saw declines in lottery revenues in 2015 and 16 states saw growth. North Carolina actually reported growth at 3.3% in real terms. It's true that revenues from lottery in North Carolina has been increasing year after year. However, lottery revenues in North Carolina did not really supplement education spending, which was the promise that the lawmakers made in 2005 while debating the legalization of lottery. Actually, there have been some studies conducted indicating that North Carolina is spending less per student on public education than before the lottery was first passed.
Well, that's interesting, and I know that, as you said, a major issue that was discussed in 2005 and in years prior to that as the lottery was debated is that those revenues would be used to supplement as opposed to supplant existing education dollars. And according to what you've said, it looks like the lottery is not living through on that promise. Well, Lucy, based on your analysis, what is causing the decline in gambling and lottery revenues in states where we've seen those declines?
I would say competition and cannibalization are the main drivers of declines in gambling revenues. There are certainly other factors as well. For example, the Great Recession had a significant impact on Americans' discretionary spending behavior. Overall, today Americans are saving more and spending less on discretionary items, and certainly spending on gambling is a discretionary spending category. Another factor is the changing demographic patterns. Gambling in general attracts elderly population, and the gaming industry is trying really hard to engage the millennials.
That's interesting, and I know that you use the term cannibalization. Can you explain that a little bit for our listeners?
Sure. So the terms cannibalization or substitution, they are mostly synonyms, and they refer to the shift of spending on one type of activity to another type. Well, cannibalization refers to the substitution of spending on the same gambling activity within different geographic locations. For example, because of the expansion of casinos and racinos, we have seen a lot of evidence for cannibalization when consumers, gamblers, no longer drove to neighboring states to spend time and money on casinos, and they stayed in their home states. That was the case between New Jersey and Pennsylvania. When Pennsylvania legalized casino operations, the lawmakers, the state officials in New Jersey blamed Pennsylvania for seeing declines in casino revenues in their home state.
Oh, now, Lucy, I know the report's purpose was not to examine the social cost of gambling, but you did look at the impact of certain social costs because, as you point out in the report, gambling creates costs that are paid by all taxpayers, not just gamblers. Tell us a little bit about what you found regarding the cost of gambling to society and how that impacts state revenues in general.
In fact, We looked at the literature, and the literature shows that expansion of any kind of gambling leads to potential social costs, which in turn leads to economic costs. So there are lots of studies that have looked at the social economic costs of gambling, and the most significant costs are related to so-called problem or pathological gambling, as well as to increased bankruptcy rates or increased crime rates. There are some estimates that around 3% of Americans are suffering from problem of pathological gambling, and every year states are spending millions of dollars on treating the pathological problem gambling. So the studies also have examined the possible impact of gambling on bankruptcy or crime rates. The results are very mixed, and it's really hard to measure the social and economic costs associated with gambling. Nevertheless, the benefits of gambling should always be viewed along with the costs, and neglecting social costs is simply not an option.
Well, I think that's very important for the public and for our lawmakers to understand that often they're led to believe that the institution of gambling or the expansion of gambling will be an economic boon for the state. But in fact, there are significant costs in lots of different areas that will result from that. We did hear that these same kinds of arguments about the lottery in North Carolina, that it would be that economic boon for the state. But based on your findings, what advice do you have for state legislators who are considering expanding various forms of gambling, including lotteries? I know here in North Carolina that there is a proposal before our state legislature right now that would allow the state lottery to double its advertising budget and essentially saturate the airwaves, television and radio with more and more ads promoting the lottery. What would you say to state legislators who are considering proposals like that or enacting forms of gambling that currently are not in place in those states? And speak specifically, if you would, about your thoughts regarding whether gambling is a reliable form of revenue for states or not.
I would say the advice is very simple. Look at the history and look at the big picture before jumping into the legalization of any kind of gambling activity. The history shows that the overall gambling revenues are not a sustainable source of revenue. For sure, expansion of any kind of gambling brings in short-term budget reliefs. It generates more revenue. However, as the novelty of any specific type of gambling activity wears off and as the competition becomes much stiffer, revenues from gambling ultimately decline and leave the states with budget holes to fill. We have seen it in the case of casinos. We looked into states that had adopted casinos before the 2006 and after the 2006, and history clearly shows that the revenues from the casino operations have been declining in the states with the older history of casino operations. So look at the big picture and look at the history would be the advice.
Well, I think that's great advice. And Lucy, before we conclude our discussion today, I want to give you an opportunity to let our listeners know where they can go to learn more about the Rockefeller Institute and your new report on state revenues from gambling.
Certainly. The new report, as well as the previous reports, are all on our websites at www.rockins.org.
Great. And let me repeat that website. That's www.rockinst.org. Again, rockinst.org for the Rockefeller Institute. And with that, Lucy DuDayan, I want to thank you so much for being with us today and for sharing your important findings regarding state-sponsored gambling on Family Policy Matters. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, John.
Before we close, I'd like to invite you to follow the North Carolina Family Policy Council on Facebook. Just log in and find us at ncfamily.org. Again, at ncfamily.org. Be sure to like us when you visit. In addition, for instant updates on pro-family news of interest, follow us on Twitter at ncfamily.org. Again, that's at ncfamily.org.
You've been listening to Family Policy Matters, a production of NC Family. to listen to our radio show online, and for more valuable resources and information about issues important to families in North Carolina, go to our website at ncfamily.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.